Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report, Learning from Our Mistakes, when we come back. You know, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m. While his coffee pot made in Japan is working, he puts his blow dryer made in Taiwan to work and shaves with his electric razor made in Hong Kong. He puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan, his designer jeans made in Singapore, and a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. After cooking up some breakfast in his new electric skillet made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico, how much can I spend today? Then after setting his watch made in Switzerland to the radio made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car made in Germany and goes looking, as he has for many months, for a good-paying American job. Then, after the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while, so he puts on a pair of sandals, made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine, made in France, turns on his TV, made in Japan, and ponders again why he cannot find a good-paying American job. Well, instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business dealing in property instead of income? Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative. It's educational, and it's entertaining, and it's free of charge. You can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or, if you're online, you can go to our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. GeorgeGordon.org. Just click on to the email machine and then send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about learning from our mistakes, and I pointed out that we didn't learn anything from World War I, World War II, or World War III, which is in the wings. We didn't learn anything from the Depression of the 1780s or the Depression of the 1930s, and I predict that we won't learn anything from the Depression of the early 21st century. I suppose that it's just human nature. There's five elements to this thing of human nature. If you've got a pen and paper handy, why don't you write these down? Because as a salesman, this is what I'm looking for. They're what we call the buying signs. Everybody has what they call buying signs. And it's based upon your vanity. You are a vain person. Vanity. Jealousy. You're very jealous. How do I know that? Everybody is. I hear people say that, God, she's vain. Hell, everybody's vain. Boy, is he jealous. Big deal. Everybody's jealous. Vanity, jealousy, lust. L-U-S-T. It's not just dirty old men that are filled with lust. Everybody is. Greed. It isn't just politicians that are greedy. Everybody's greedy. And then fear. F-E-A-R. Fear. Everybody's filled with fear, greed, lust, jealousy, and vanity. And how do I know that? You're designed that way. When God turned out the product in the Garden of Eden, he had a man that was vain, jealous, lust, greedy, and fearful. And then he wasn't satisfied with that. He made a woman to go along with her, and she was just as vain, just as jealous, greedy, lustful, and fearful as Adam was. Had a pair of them. And then they had a bunch of children, and they were all filled with vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And then I came on the scene. And then I took a look at it, and I said, my God, I'm vain. And I'm jealous, filled with lust, greed, and I'm a fearful, timid little fellow. And I wonder what I can do to overcome those five disabilities. Everybody's got them. Everybody can overcome them. In fact, that's part and parcel with this thing called human nature. Your creator, he kind of thought he'd like to see if you couldn't overcome that. Now, there was a cute story that was put on film one day. They had either a psychiatrist or a psychologist. He's in his office, and he's interviewing little kids, see? Not wee little kids, but kids about 6 to 10 years old, something like that. So he takes them into this private room where you got one-way mirrors that look through, and you can see in, but they can't see out. And then you got this camera, or two or three, and I don't know how many cameras they had, but they're photographing this kid. See? And so the psychologist, he goes through a little program in there with the kid, and then at the end of it, he says, now listen, you've really done good here, boy, or little girl, you're really wonderful. Now listen, I'm going to give you a reward. He pulls out a bowl of candy, puts it on the desk, and he says, now, as you can see, there's all this candy in here. Now, I'm going to leave the room, and I'm going to leave this candy out here on the desk, and I don't want you to take any candy out of this bowl. And then when I come back, if you don't take any candy out of the bowl, When I come back, I'm going to give you 10 pieces of candy. Now, if you can't wait for the 10 pieces of candy, and you just have to have a piece of candy because you just can't wait, you can have one piece of candy, and you can take it if you want to. Go ahead and take one piece. But if you can withstand, if you overcome the temptation, leave the candy alone. Don't touch any candy. I'll give you 10 pieces when I come back. Psychologist leaves the room. Now, we're sitting here watching these kids over this TV camera, and some of them fidget, and they're looking around, and they touch the candy, and then they put it back, and then they mull it over a little bit. And I did this to about 10 kids, and all of the kids took their one piece of candy, and a couple, three of them, took 2, 3, 4, 5 pieces of candy because they figured, well, nobody can figure out. And then the psychologist comes back in, and he says, now, did you take a piece of candy? Oh, no, I didn't touch any. Do I get my 10 pieces now? And then he would tell him, oh, no, we've been watching you, and you already took 3 pieces. You took 3, didn't you, Bobby? And then confronted with the evidence, well, yeah, I guess I took 3. So I told you could have 1, but you took 3. That's more than 1, isn't it, Bobby? So you're not entitled to your 10 pieces now, are you? Now, if you think those 10 children are an anomaly over there, you can rest assured that you're just exactly the same way. See, you can't handle cigarettes and alcohol and lot lizards, and there's a whole bunch of things out there that adults can't handle either. And that's because we all have this vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And so we need to learn how to overcome that. You learn from your mistakes. Now, learning from your mistakes means that you have to put away gratification. Now, I'm 70 years old, and I've never had a new car. Not yet. Now, I wouldn't tell you that I'm never going to have a new car. I don't know that. I can't say never. I'm not dead yet. But I don't intend to ever buy a new car. I don't ever intend to have a new car. I might rent a Hertz car or a Navis car before I die, and in which case I might drive a new car, but I'm not going to buy one. I'm not going to have one. I'm not lusting and coveting after one. In fact, the auto industry would starve to death, go bankrupt, and upside down waiting for George Gordon to buy a new car. It ain't going to happen. Fortunately for America, fortunately for France and Germany and everybody else in the world and Japan making automobiles, the rest of the people in the world aren't like George Gordon, because if they were, oh my God, the auto industry would collapse because I wouldn't buy a new car. And that's because the new car is such a bad value. It's a bad buy. It's a bad business deal. It's a deal that business boys make, not businessmen. I don't know of any businessman that would buy a new car. There may be some businessmen who have so much money that the new car doesn't mean anything to them. You know, it could be a Donald Trump. I remember I went out shopping one time with a guy named Larry Flint, and he bought a brand new Rolls Royce for his wife as a present. I forgot what the present was. Maybe it was a birthday or something. Anyway, he bought it for as a present. And it was this many years ago now, it was $104,000. $104,000. And he put it on his credit card. I didn't know that people had credit cards that went out to $100,000, but I guess when you're a multimillionaire, I guess, you know, $100,000 credit card ain't all that big a deal. Rolls Royce. And his wife was just livid. She called him everything but a white man. She didn't want a Rolls Royce, she wanted something else. There you go. Just can't please him now, can you? And I thought, you know, if I had a wife like that, she died mysteriously, sometime after that. And I can understand why that woman would die. But anyway, getting back to our learning from our mistakes, is there something that we can learn from this thing of automobiles? It's been going on for, I shouldn't say thousands, but it's been going on for 100 years in this country. So let me tell you a story. The Department of Labor keeps a record of all of the income groups and social strata. In Hartford, Connecticut, in a neighborhood that averaged $100,000 annual net income per year, the Labor Department reports the following. 1, the average family with income of $100,000 a year is in the top 5% of income earners. 2, this family is made up of college-educated professionals such as doctors, dentists, lawyers, insurance brokers, and real estate brokers. 3, on average, they live in a $237,000 house. They drive at least one $40,000 car. And although they own and maintain, on average, 3 cars, each household has 3 cars. One of them is a $40,000 car. Now, their expenses on average are as follows. First, income tax, state, federal, and city, 20% state, federal is 20%, state 3%, city 1%, 24% total. Property taxes are $3,000 a year. House payments are $1,711 a month with interest. Number 4, utilities, telephone, gas, water, and electric is 3%. Number 5, insurance, life, health, fire, auto, and home, 6% of their income. Number 6, entertainment, including eating out, 5%. Groceries in an upscale household, 7%. And number 8, interest payments, credit cards, auto, and other finance charges, but not their house payment. Remember, it's already been calculated, is 15%. That's a total of 83%. That's $83,000 out of 100,000 bucks is earmarked. When this guy gets done, when he gets all through, at the end of the year, he's got $17,000 of mad money. He can just spend it any damn way he wants. Isn't that amazing? All right, let me run that by you again. Taxes, 24%. Property taxes, 3%. House payments, 20%. Utilities, 3%. Insurance, 6%. Entertainment, 5%. Grocery, 7%. Interest payments on everything except your house payment, 15%. You get through. Out of 100,000 bucks a year, you have 83% spent on fixed-priced items. You got 17,000 left over. Now, that's the American dream. That's what everybody in America is striving to accomplish. They're using their vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear to produce $100,000 a year so that they can end up with $17,000 of mad money. All right, now listen to this. Now, the books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy mandate a lifestyle somewhat different but parallel to the American dream. That is, number one, tithes and holy day offerings, 15%. Property taxes on 240 acres, $600 a year, 1.5%. House payments, none, zero. Car payments, none, zero. Grocery for a subsistence farmer, none, zero. Utilities, $800 a month, 24%. Interest payments, none, zero. Entertainment for Sabbaths and holy days and tithes, 10%. Insurance, zero. Let me try this one again. We pay nothing for insurance, nothing on interest, and we pay nothing on house payments, nothing on car payments, and nothing on groceries. We have property taxes, which equal 1.5%. We have tithing, which is equivalent to the income tax, which is 15%. And then we have entertainment, which is Sabbaths and holy days, which takes 10%. Got that? All right. When we get all through at the end of the year, we've got 25, 35, 45, 50, and 1/2. That takes up 1/2. If I make $100,000 a year, I have $49,500 left over to spend on mad money using the Ten Commandment model. In place of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto model, I have a 10 commandment model, which 17, 17, and 17, it outperforms the 10 plank model by three times. So I thought I would point that out to you. Is there a better way, is there a better lifestyle out here in the world than the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto? Now listen, and that's assuming that you're making 100,000 bucks a year. And most of you people out there ain't making 100 grand a year. Remember, that's the top 5% that are doing that. The other 95% of you aren't even in the game. How do you like that? Now, if you'd like to get into the game, there's another game here in town called the Ten Commandment Model, which has absolutely nothing to do with religion, nothing to do with Christianity, nothing to do with the church. Hell, the church and Christianity don't have anything to do with the Bible. Test it. Write me an email and tell me which of the Ten Commandments your church practices. Go ahead. Go ahead. Tell me. Well, we don't believe in murder. You don't. What the hell are you doing in Afghanistan and Iraq? We don't believe in theft. You don't. Why are you using Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and mortgages? Huh? You don't believe in the Sabbath, and you sure don't keep the Sabbath, and everybody knows that that's on Saturday and not on Sunday. You know, if you take a look at the Ten Commandment model, it's about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party. There isn't anybody that practices it, and there isn't anybody that wants it. And that includes the church. That's the last thing the church wants, is practicing the Ten Commandments. But I thought maybe it's time to learn from our mistakes. Now, we're all practicing communism. We've been doing this for about 100 years. Well, how do you like the results? You got the worst economic collapse in the history of the world right in front of your eyeballs. I mean, it's right in your face today as I speak. And as you're putting your tax report together and sending in your money to bail out the very banks that caused this economic debacle to start with, can you learn anything from that? Not that I'm necessarily trying to get you to or that I want you to. No, it's your choice in life. Now listen, let me tell you a story about automobiles. You know, people buy cars, and they want to buy a new car. They like to drive a little better car than the average Joe six-pack. Well, one time, I was speaking over in Oklahoma City, and this guy was sent out to the airport to pick me up, and then he did. And he picked me up in a 1985 Oldsmobile station wagon. A pretty nice car. It wasn't brand new now. This is probably about 1988, 89, 90 maybe. I don't know exactly. But it was, you know, the car was 4 or 5 years old. It was a used car. And the guy was driving home, and he said, I got to stop at my house, pick up a couple, three things for the meeting tonight. And so I said, well, fine. It's all right. My wife was with me, so we're sitting in the car, and we're driving along. He pulls off the freeway, goes down this street and he parks his car. He gets out of the car. Then he walks straight ahead for about three houses, and then he turns to the right. Now, you know, normally when people are going to stop at their house, they pull up in front of the house. They get out and go around the front of the car and walk straight into the house, which is 90 degrees to the right of the automobile. Not this guy. He gets out and goes around the front of the car, gets on the sidewalk, and he walks in the same direction as the car was headed, to the corner, which is three houses down. Turns to the right and disappears. I'm sitting there, and I looked over at my wife, and I said, "Isn't that kind of strange?" And she looked back at me, and she says, "Yes, that is kind of strange. I've never seen that before." And I'd never seen that before either. I thought that was really strange. Okay, so some time went by. Pretty soon, the guy comes back, gets in the car, drives back out, gets on the freeway, and he's tooling down the freeway. And he said, "I suppose you're wondering why I parked the car and then walked down to the corner to go to my house." And I said to him, "You know, that thought crossed my mind." And he said, "Well, I thought maybe it might. You see, I haven't made the payments on this car for 2 months, and I'm afraid that they're going to repossess it at any time. And it would certainly be an embarrassment and a real problem if they were to repossess the car before I got you to the meeting hall." And I said, "Well, you're right. That would be kind of a problem." And so while we're driving down the road, I said to the young fellow, I said, "Well, how much did this car cost?" And then here's kind of the numbers on the car. If you got a pen and paper there and you want to write them down, well, you could do that. The car cost him $7,000. $7,000. That was the price on the car. And when he bought the car, he traded in his Chevy Nova, which was worth $500. And that means that he owes $6,500 on the car. Or maybe the car might have been $7,500 and he traded it in and he had a $7,000 mortgage. That's what it was. Yeah, $7,000. The balance due was $7,500 and he got $500 credit on his automobile. That's what it was. All right, so that isn't too bad. And then he's got to pay about $300 a month for, 36 months. Those weren't the exact numbers, but it was pretty close to that. I just rounded it off, right? Now, and the interest rate was 14%. 14% interest. So I worked out these numbers after the fact. And I'll give that to you here in a minute. But I asked the young fellow, I said, "Now listen, why did you buy this car?" And he said, "Well, I got five kids. And because I got five kids, the car isn't big enough, so we had to have a new car." I said, "Excuse me, but did all these five kids come upon you suddenly overnight?" "Oh, no. Did you have one at a time?" Yeah. "Did they come about one a year?" Yeah. "Well, I see. Well, and you had about 5 years to plan for this purchase, didn't you? I mean, on the day that you got married, it was you and your wife. That was two, and you fit into the Chevy Nova quite nicely." "Okay. And then the next step was you had a child, and he probably fit in the back seat of the Nova. And then you had two kids, and then you had three, four, and five. And now you ended up with the Chevy Nova, and now it's too small, so you had to buy this car. All right. How long have you had this car?" "It's 16 months." So he's had it 18 months, but he's made 16 payments on it. 16 payments of $300 each is $5,400. And let me see if I'm right here. He's paying $300 a month, 300 times 16 payments, $4,800. So he's paid $4,800 on it so far. Oh, I'll take that back. Payments on this car was $350. $350 times 16 months was $5,600. So he paid $5,600 on it so far. And I said, "Now they're going to take the car away from you, and then you're going to be out the car, out the $5,600. He says, yeah. And I said, "It's worse than that, because when they sell the car at auction, if they come up with something less than their $7,000, then they can turn around and hit you with a deficiency judgment, put a lien on you." He said, "Oh, yeah, I know that." I said, "Well, let me ask you this. Did you plan in advance for this?" And he said, "No, I guess I didn't." And I said, well, when you made this down payment, that is your Chevy Nova, and the payments are $350 a month, had you waited 90 more days, just 90 days, at $350 a month, you'd have $1,050. Could you have bought a station wagon for $1,050? And he kind of looks surprised. He says, "Yeah, I guess I could have." I said, "Now, had you done that, you would still have your Chevy Nova. You'd have the station wagon that cost you $1,000, and you'd have $5,000 left over in cash, wouldn't you?" It was almost like the Ford light bulb came on in this kid's mind. He's already paid $5,600 for this nice 1985 Oldsmobile station wagon. He could have bought an older model car for $1,000, and he'd have had two cars. Wouldn't have been a new one, but it would have been, you know, a car. And so, yeah, he said, yeah, I guess I could have done that. And I said, now, what's the worst thing that can happen to you? And he says, they're going to repossess the car. I said, no. No. I said, the worst thing that can happen to you is they let you keep it. Because if you keep it, you got to keep making the payments. And assuming you can make the payments, you're going to make $350 for 36 months. Now, watch how this is. $350 times 36 months is $12,600. Now, here's a guy that paid $7,000 for a car that's going to cost him $12,600. Can you follow that? That's the interest charge on it, 14%. And 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, $5,600 is in interest. Or put another way, in 16 months, he paid the interest on the loan. He still owes the $7,000 for the car. Isn't that special? Here's an even worse piece to the puzzle. How much is that car worth today? He's had it now for a year and a half. Well, the car isn't worth $7,500 anymore, is it? Now the car is probably worth about $5,600, maybe less. But get this. I said to the young boy, I said, if you had the $5,600 in cash, which is $1,400 short of your $7,500 that you needed to go buy the car, what would happen if you walked into a car lot with $5,600 cash in your hand, pointed at the $7,000 car and says, I'll take that car if you'll take $5,600. Do you think they'd take the $5,600 or not? And he said, I don't know. And I said, they would. And that's because I know how much they paid for the car. And he said, how much did they pay for the car? And I said, not a dime over $3,500. How do I know that? Because that's half price. And the car is going to be marked up 100% or one keystone. That's called a keystone markup. Where did the car company, where did the used car dealer buy the car for $3,500? Well, it was probably repossessed from somebody else, and they bought it at the auto auction. And this kid could have gone to the auto auction for the same $3,500 or $4,000 and bought the same car, cash, at the auto auction. All right, now look at his dilemma. He's got a $3,500 car that he owes $12,600 on, that he's already paid $5,600, that he's in imminent fear of losing, and has a $7,000 deficiency judgment against him, which will leave him afoot because now he has zero cars. But if he had minded his P's and Q's and kept his 56 Chevy Nova and waited, just waited 3 months, 90 days, just prepared for 90 days and saved the $350 a month for 90 days. I mean, after all, he had $350 a month to make the first three payments, didn't he? Well, then he must have had $350 a month for 3 months to save it, and he could have bought himself another station wagon. Now he'd have the Chevy Nova and the station wagon, and had he continued to save the $350 a month for 13 months, remember, 13 times $350 equals $4,550. He could now take the $3,500 and go down and buy at the auto auction another car equal to his 85 Oldsmobile for $3,500. Now he would have a $3,500 Oldsmobile and a $1,000 station wagon, and he would have the Chevy Nova, and he would have $1,000 cash in his pocket. But when this deal works itself out, he's going to end up with no 85 Oldsmobile, no second station wagon, and no Chevy Nova. He's going to be on foot and like as not end up with a $7,000 deficiency judgment. Now, do you see why I don't buy a new car? Now, this is what we call business boys and businessmen. The man who buys a new car and makes payments is a business boy. He doesn't have any business sense at all. None. Zero. Zilch. It doesn't exist. He's motivated by his vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. The five motivators of human nature. That's what drives him. That's what motivates him. He's just a slavering ball of protoplasm that just kind of quakes and shivers in the noonday sun. He has no control over himself whatsoever. All right, so there's the story on automobiles. Hang on, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and a biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you're hearing on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about learning from our mistakes. Now, I said I've never owned a new automobile. I don't ever plan to. First of all, when you buy that brand new car and you drive it off the showroom floor, well, you lose about 10% of its value the day you drive it off the floor. Brand new car, 10%. Now, you've signed a contract with this car, and you got to make these payments for, in some cases, 60 months. I've heard of one outfit that's offering car loans for 10 years. Hell, most cars don't last 10 years. I mean, you know, you're talking about 10 years. That's a pretty old car. I've got a 10-year-old car out here, and it's still running, still working good. But let me show you a little different take on this. I've got a boneyard down here on my farm, and there's probably 30 cars in that boneyard. All of them, or just about all of them, were running the day that I drove them down there. But I go out and I buy a car, and let's say it's $2,000. You know, in today's dollars, I go out and buy a car for $2,000. You can buy a pretty good car, a pretty good pickup for $2,000. If it's running the day that you get in it and you drive it around the block, it'll probably run for about a year. That's been my experience. It'll run for a year. Now, most of them will run for 2 or 3 years. Now, I got a pickup out here, and I think I paid $1,500 for that pickup, and I've had it about a year, and it's still running good. And I got another pickup out here, paid $5,000 for it, and I've had it for 3 years. It's a little bigger, gaudier pickup. And I suspect it'll run for another 2 or 3 years, be my guess, before the engine blows up in it or transmission blows up or something like that. Now, if something really wild blows up, you know, like the engine, I'll tow it down to the boneyard and I'll just leave it there. I'm not going to spend a ton of money to repair it and fix it. I'll do the minor repairs, but nothing major. And I drive them until they quit, you know, and then when it quits, and I just get out of it and go buy another one, And then when it's all said and done, we add up what are our savings. Well, now, if I went out and bought that pickup that I paid $5 for, it's one of those Chevrolet Duallys. Now, you know, these Duallys cost $40,000. Now, take $40,000. $40,000, that's quite a chunk of change, you know. And let's suppose that we're going to keep this thing for 10 years and then we'll sell it for 10. It's going to cost us $30,000 or $3,000 a year just to own it. Okay, well, that's what I got with my $5,000 pickup out there. If I own that pickup for 5 years, and it cost me $1,000 a year, that's one-third what it cost me to own a brand new pickup. So the used pickup cost me about one-third what it costs you to drive around in a new one. And driving around in a new pickup, all that is vanity, pure and simple. Nothing more, nothing less. Just vain. I've just got to show everybody, I've got to show David and Ed and Mike that I got a new pickup. Doesn't have anything to do with reality. Listen, my old pickup out here is the same size as your brand new one, tows the same size trailer, hauls the same number of cows to the auction, does everything that yours does. Smells a little worse, looks a little worse, got a little rust spots on it. But when it comes to hauling cows to the sale barn, your pickup at $40,000 doesn't haul one more cow or one less. Doesn't get there any faster or any slower. It's just shinier and brighter and neater and smells better. And then you like it better, and it feels a lot better, and it makes all of your friends say, wow, how does he do that? He does it by giving up a portion of his standard of living. He gives it up when he buys health insurance. He gives it up when he buys that new car. You know, you're throwing $12,000 a year away on health insurance, and then you're throwing another $3,000 a year away on this automobile. You know, 12 and 3, that's 15 grand a year. That's $15,000 a year that I put in my pocket. 14 of it goes into my pocket. Cost me about $1,000 a year to buy and own a pickup. Cost me about $1,000 a year to buy and own my Suburban out here. Now, the difference between businessmen and business boys is being able to control your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. If you can learn that, that'll save you a lot of money. That'll make you a lot of money. If you can't, then it's going to cost you a lot of money. Now, today, as you're watching the news, they'll have a segment on there about the homeless people of America. And they'll have a segment about the foreclosed homes of America. And they'll tell you these gut-wrenching stories. And they'll have little kids crying in their tents because they used to have a home and a car, and they used to go to school with their friends, and now they're living down by the railroad tracks, and mommy and daddy are fighting all the time, and they don't have a car, and they don't have a house, and we just don't know what we're going to do. I hear you. But hey, listen, mom and dad had a choice to make here a few years back. Should they buy that house on time and pay interest and usury? Had they looked in the Bible, it said, no, don't do that. That's bad business. When they went down and they signed up for that, three, six, seven, eight-year loan, you know, with the $2,000 cash back, come down, don't deny yourself, come down and drive out in that new Dodge Dakota today. And they did. They made a choice to make, and they made it. Time went on, and one day old Bob lost his job. Now he couldn't pay for the Dodge Dakota, and he couldn't make his house payments. Now he's just destitute, and he didn't know what to do next. Hey, listen, 5 years ago, Bob, when you were making those decisions to buy the Dodge Dakota and the new bigger, better house, I had the same decision I had to make, and I didn't buy the Dodge, and I didn't buy the bigger, better house. And I'm not complaining about the depression today. I haven't lost my job. Never had one to start with. Bob, my first wife told me one time, she said these words to me. She says, why don't you go out and get a real job? Why don't you go out and get a real job? Why don't you pack your lunch to work and work 8 hours and come home like everybody else with a regular paycheck? That was my first wife. Now, I don't know. I guess I just wasn't cut out for a real job. So I've just had a pretend job all my life. Well, not quite all. I did. At one time, I did have a real job. I had a real paycheck every week. And then I got off on this thing of private business. And now I don't have a regular paycheck, but when I get one, it's usually a pretty good one. So if I don't get a regular paycheck every week, then when I do get a paycheck, I have to stretch that and make it last until the next paycheck. And I may not get a paycheck for a month or 2 months or 3 months. You know, I never know. So I have to have savings. I mean, I gotta say, I don't have any unemployment insurance. I don't have any workman's compensation. You understand? If I break my leg today, when I go out to milk the cows, when I finish this broadcast, I am going to go out and milk my cows. Do you know that I could fall down the steps and break my leg on the way out to the barn? And I don't have any health insurance. Do you know what that means? That means that I got to pay for my broken leg myself. Now, most people pay $12,000 a year in health insurance. Do you know what it costs to deal with a broken leg? My wife had a broken ankle one time, and it cost $235 to fix a broken ankle. I think that $235 cash to fix a broken ankle is better than $12,000 a year on health insurance. My wife has had a catastrophic illness called cancer for 30 years. And I got to tell you that this cancer thing here does cost us a little money. There's her coffee. There's her special diet. She only eats organic food. There's the cost of planting our own garden and harvesting, and there is some cost involved in it. But I don't think it's more than $1,000 a year. Now, my wife has been successfully dealing with her cancer for 30 years. At $1,000 a year, that's $30,000. At the very same time that most people are paying $12,000 a year for health insurance for 30 years, let's say that's $12,000 times 30 is $360,000. Now, well, the rest of you people have spent $360,000 in purchasing power, in today's purchasing power. You spent $360,000 over the last 30 years. My wife spent $30,000, and she actually has cancer, and she's dealt with it successfully the whole period of time. Let's just divide $30,000 by $360,000. My wife has spent 8%. So that means that she netted 90% plus. She saved 90% on her own cancer. That's why I married my second wife. That woman can count. My God, that woman's smart. And I'll tell you something else. My wife can count with her shoes on. She doesn't even take her shoes off to count. And she goes to the grocery store all by herself and makes change. Now, I say that's remarkable for someone that's just a girl. I tell her that every once in a while. I say, do you understand that you're just a girl? I tell her that once in a while so it doesn't go to her head. All right, now, I wanted to let you know that so that you could understand. This car thing over here is important. I don't deny it. And you're going to need an automobile. In fact, in your lifetime, I don't know how many automobiles I've had in my lifetime, but I'm sure it was 25. I'm absolutely certain I've had 25 cars in my life. Hell, I can point to 10 cars here on the farm that I've parked here over the last, you know, the last 25 years. I bet I got 15 of them. Hell, I might have all 25 of them down the boneyard. I ought to go count them up on these days. And I've never had a new car. And I've never made a car payment. Boys and girls, I'm 70 years old. I have never made one single car payment. I just, for some reason, went out and paid cash. Of course, for the old junkers that I buy, you know, you can't hardly finance them. You got to pay cash. Now, I wouldn't say that they're all old junkers and old clunkers. You know, once in a while, I buy a fair to middling good one and drive it for a while. But the moral to the story is that business boys make car payments, and they buy expensive cars that go way beyond their ability to pay. And businessmen buy cars and pay cash that they can afford and own. And there's a lot to be said, I don't deny, a lot to be said for things like gas mileage and maintenance, you know, and repairs. I don't deny that. But you know, when the engine blew up in my forklift, I towed it down to the boneyard, I'm not spending $5,000 to rebuild the engine. Hell, I can go out and buy another forklift for $2,000. You know, come on, let's wake up here. People say, well, I got to buy a new car because, you know, these used ones, you know, they go haywire, and then you got all these expensive repairs. Expensive repairs? Hang on a minute. Wait a second. Hang on. Let's think about this for a minute. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here, we go out and we buy ourselves a car. Let's take this kid in Oklahoma, and he buys this $1,000 car, and then he drives it, and the transmission goes out. Now, it used to be you could get a transmission rebuilt for about $350 down at AMCO, you know, 25 years ago. Well, today it was $2,000. Would you pay $2,000 to have a transmission repaired in a $1,000 car? I wouldn't. And I don't know of anybody else out there that would either. All right, so that solves your problem. You got an engine, a transmission, and a rear end. And you got a $1,000 car. The day you buy it, it drives. You know, if it's smoking and hooping and making crazy noises, you wouldn't buy it, would you? And I do another thing. I got an old buddy over here named Charlie Hogan. And hey, Charlie, he's a mechanic. Hey, Charlie, come on over here. Come to the auto auction with me. And, you know, if I buy him dinner and I give him $50, he'll come up to the auto auction and say, hey, listen, take a look at some of these cars. I want to buy a car. And he did one day. I wanted to buy a van. I bought a minivan up there. It was about an 88 or an 89 or 90, something like that, Chevrolet minivan. Had 40,000 miles on. That's all, 40,000 miles. And the lady that owned it, she must have smoked a cigarette every mile, 40,000 cigarettes. I mean, the inside of that thing smelled like Liggett and Myers. God, it was god-awful. I mean, just get in there and take three deep breaths, and it was the equivalent of smoking two packs. So anyway, that was a problem. We had to disinfect the car, you know, so we could live in it. But anyway, I paid $1,800 for about a 10, say it's a 90. I think I bought it in 2000, 2001, maybe 2002. The car was 10 or 12 years old, had 40,000 miles on. And it cost me $1,800. Plus Charlie, I paid Charlie a few bucks to go out and look at. And that car just ran and ran and ran and ran, and just a great car. That's what you're looking for. You buy them at the auto auction. And if you don't know much about cars, don't you have a friend that's a mechanic? Don't you have a friend who has a friend who has a friend that could go up and start that thing up and listen to it? And you can't test drive them at the auto auction, but you can start them and listen to them. You can put it in gear and move it forward. Does the transmission work? You know, you can check the fluids in them. And hey, get this. You got $2,000 in this thing. It costs you $5,000 to rebuild the engine. It costs you $2,000 to rebuild the transmission, and probably $2,000 to rebuild the rear end. And you're going to buy a $2,000 car. If anything goes haywire in the transmission, engine, or rear end, you junk it. See how simple that is? And go buy another $2,000 car. But you're not buying a $20,000 or $30,000 car. And of course, the question arises, well, instead of paying $30,000 for a car, will I have to buy 15 $2,000 cars? I never have. I did buy a pickup one time that was a piece of trash. I think I paid, $1,500 for it, something like that. And hell, the engine was bad in it. And they did something to doctor that thing up. And after I took it, that it started missing and coughing. And I forgot now. So somebody told me that they did something to it to snooker me. And I got snookered, and it cost me $1,500. But that didn't make me go out and buy a new car. You know, sometimes you take it in the shorts, okay. It's down in the boneyard to this day. It was some kind of a little jet pickup with a camper on it, a piece of trash. Okay, so I got snookered. But, you know, of all the cars that I bought, that's the only snooker car that I can think of. I got worked over once. And I don't know much about cars either. That's why I always get some guy to go down there and look at one for me. All right. I got another guy over here, Mike the mechanic. So you just take it over. This is the guy that does my repair work over here at the DX station. And so I take it over to the DX station, and I say, hey, Mike, drive this around a little bit and tell me if it's any good. Take it out, test drive it, bring it back. Yeah, it's good or not. It's got this and that and another thing. You know, here's another thing over here is what I noticed about Now, brakes. Well, the brakes cost you $150 to put new brake shoes on. Maybe you got to turn a drum or something like that. Now, I don't mind. If I got a $2,000 car and it cost me $150 to do the brakes, I don't mind that. Cost me $100 to put a window in. Okay, I don't mind that. Sometimes little things happen. Break a window. Yeah, your brakes go bad. Got to put new tires on it. I had one the other day. I put 4 new tires on it. But you get a brand new car and you get 4 brand new tires. Well, you know, you can go down and buy 4 brand new tires, you know, for $400. Probably less than that. The other day I bought 4 tires that were $80 each. 8, 16, 24 is $320 plus tires plus mounting plus balancing. Is about, I don't know, $400 probably. Mounted in the whole 9 yards. So when it's all said and done, buy the new tires down at the DX station. You don't need to buy them from Ford or General Motors. And you'll find out that you're going to save yourself a ton of money. And then when you lose your job, it doesn't make as much difference because you own the car. Now, next time we'll take a look at a house. What would happen if you actually owned that house? And I know you're going to sit there and say, well, how in the hell could I own a $400,000 house? Well, that's a pretty tough trick, but why don't you build a $50,000 house that you probably could afford over a period of 3 years? Then you've got a $400,000 house, you know, as long as the bubble is there. And then when the bubble breaks, you own the house free and clear. And I'll tell you about old Henry Moore. The dumbest kid in the 9th grade ended up with more money than any other kid in the graduating class of 1957 at Eureka High School. And I'll tell you about the Henry Moore story next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Henry Moore. The Henry Moore story. Just wrote it down, so don't forget. Hey, I'm about out of time here, boys and girls. We'll have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.